Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that could go 19 months without a new episode and still have nothing to say. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and yes, you are not dreaming. This is an entirely new episode of Super Tool Shed. Your prayers have been answered and those goats you sacrificed have not been in vain. We are here, and as always, first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been these past 19 months?
All right, so let's do the rapid fire. All right, in order, I was in Mega Man 11. I quit smoking around the time of Mega Man 11, and have successfully quit smoking for a whole year as of this date.
Way to fucking go!
In August, I started losing weight in the vein of one Bennett the Sage White. I am down 25 pounds and 50 over the last 2 years. And at the turn of the new year, the car had a massive catastrophic failure, and that took 18 days to fix, which was awesome and terrible in 10 degree weather. And in that time, a stray cat wandered into my garage, which some of you may have been following the hashtag Schrodinger's Crate. Named by Bill Rogers, friend to you, friend to me, friend to small children, Bill Rogers. And now we're here, which we're going to get to why we're here. You ever wonder why we're here? But first, Bennett, how have you been?
Actually, now that you mention it, I do feel like I have a lot to say because a lot has happened to me in these past 19 months. I believe the last time we talked was actually talking about the Wonder Woman movie. No, doesn't that seem like an eon ago? And I was still morbidly obese then. But that has since changed. I'm still under 200 pounds, even a year removed from my weight loss blog. So I'm still outside of that big old weight loss, the literal weight off my shoulders. Things have been pretty much the same going here on out. So, you know, just making the show and just, you know, keep pumping them out.
Which, all right, let's get down to it. Why has there been no Tool Shed in 19 months? I'll tell you why. Because part of the condition of Tool Shed is that it be a turnkey experience for the both of us, which, after a certain point, it wasn't. We recorded 3 separate shows. That's 3 hours of content. None of them actually recorded because Skype's API changed. And then our schedule started to drift apart. That's literally it. I mean, like, we have, like, it's been 19 months, yes. Like, we have gone through a lot of physical and life changes. But the fact is that just doing the show became less and less turnkey to the point where every time we would try, something would go wrong. And then we would just forget about it for a while. And then I would do, like, a Q&A on Twitter. And people are like, when's the next Tool Shed? And I'm like, I don't know, we're trying to figure that out. And is Tool Shed canceled? No, we would tell you that. And when Tool Shed, shut the fuck up, Travis!
You see, this is such a dangerous precedent. We do not want to encourage this kind of behavior, where if you poke us with a stick long enough and hard enough, we'll cave and make an episode. That's not how this works. Nor should it ever be how it works. And yet this guy right here messages me out of nowhere, just like, we're doing Tool Shed today. It's like, why? It's like, this bullshit.
Now, the last time we were here, you know, it was right around the time that we had done Yomacon. And, you know, it was that Tool Shed fans just come out of the woodwork. It's so interesting and very, like, it makes you feel heard and appreciated. And, you know, that we invest this time, even when it's just the two of us shooting the shit, right? Like, we invest this time and we're both just like, we're bullshit. But people enjoy it. You know, it's their, you know, it became their drive time show or their white noise show or what have you, as do many podcasts. I mean, we are surrounded on all sides by podcasts these days, and that is a really cool fucking thing.
It can be, depending on the podcast in question. I don't like to throw our hat into the ring of great podcasts like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and your other classic staples, but we all have a place on the tapestry of the podcast internet.
Hey man, if you have one listener, you have an audience. And, you know, like I've always been very, you know, on Front Street about appreciating that. And I don't appreciate that any less. It is just that it is really hard to articulate everything that I just said and encapsulate it in a tweet where everybody around Toolshed fans isn't immediately bored by the show became less turnkey, the API changed, we're trying to find a Skype recorder that still works, and we never did, by the way. We're on Discord right now.
And that's an entirely new experience for me, as well as Mark. Our apprehension of adopting the service was really tempered by all the horror stories that used to come out. I hear it's better now, hence why we're on the platform right now, but those, like, what was it, the last 3 years of Discord's existence was just nothing. Oh, another data breach.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, they have, you know, like, this many users, but only this much support staff, and, you know, this info dump, that info dump, and it's just like, you know, that seems like a lot of baby giraffe problems right now that, quite honestly, I don't need in my life. So when people are like, what are you going to get on Discord, old man? I'm like, it is not that I'm an old man. It is that I worked tech support. You are an end user. You're doing what end users do. We send you into the coal mine, idiots. We send you in to open the emails, and then we come out to fix what you open.
I was about to say, like, we're all canaries in the coal mine, except instead of dying, we just expose ourselves to possible data breaches.
Yeah, and then it's like, I don't understand. I was just using this really popular app that everybody was using at the time, and I just wanted to animate my face, and what do you mean all my data's in the cloud now? Like, that's, like, it's just, you know, like, okay, here's my, like, I haven't been tech support in years, but obviously I still fix stuff, so let me give you a little piece of advice. When everybody around you is like, this new fun app that doesn't seem to do much of anything except for this really kitschy fun thing that we're all into right now, treat that like a fucking truck that says free candy, all right?
Especially when those apps are actually aimed at children, TikTok.
Yeah, seriously, just treat it like it's a big black panel van that has free candy, not even in like a nicely printed sign, but it's just like Krylon rattle canned on the side. Treat it like that. Give it 6 months to a year.
And the candy that they're trying to lure kids with is like Bitto Honeys.
Yeah, like give it 6 months to a year. You know, and if nothing major happens, if nothing drops on fucking IO9 about like, guess what, suckers? Then join. But until then, and that's, you know, that's to say, like, I understand that, you know, like, QA testing is really fucking hard, it's really expensive, it's easier to test shit in the field. Part of the reason why it is that QA testing is barely a thing these days is because even if you spend all this money and manpower on QA testing, you can't possibly account for everything that happens in the field. I get that, all right? I know that it's also cheaper to test it in the field and deal with the bad press than it is to just fucking QA test it.
But
give it 6 months to a year. And that was my general policy, and that's what I recommended to Bennett. Like, you know, like, we don't really need to do Discord. Like I don't need it, and most of the people that we work with are still on fucking Skype. Not that big a deal. So it's really hard to encapsulate all of that into a tweet. Travis.
Say it with such venom, you act like you keyed your car. The watch, you just walk out to the bird, and then all of a sudden, right where the door handle is, there's like, so when's the next tool shed, right, keyed right into your car, right there.
Oh, God, man. Like, sometimes it just feels like that, right? Like, Cause, you know, like, you try and just like, oh, let's have a fun Q&A, and then it's like, when Toolshed, and it's like, now I know how 4-Star felt with Win Broly, just like, every time they turned around, Win Broly, it's our Win Broly, and it's just like, now Toolshed, okay, and now we have a new setup, and the setup works, and it's not, like, and we don't even have all that much to talk about, necessarily, because again, like, life changes, and like, what was the last game you played, Bennett?
Literally the last new game, or just the last game in general?
The last new game.
the last absolute new game, I picked up the horsey game, Red Dead Redemption 2, and I was immediately let down by just how Sims-like it was. I had to take care of the horse. I had to feed myself. I had to take care of a multitude of different things, and it was such a fucking letdown. It was a life simulator wrapped up in a Western game, and that was not what I signed on for. I don't know, it was such a letdown for me, especially because I've been looking forward to this game for years, but like all the hoops I had to jump through just to, you know, keep a horse. And then, you know, I'm an hour into a playthrough and I see this woman who like needs some help, who needs some help to be driven into town. It's like, oh, okay, I'm driven into town and I got a ring that's worth a lot of money. It's like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. Then all of a sudden some guy who is in a bar, you know, challenges me to a fight, punches me, I punch him back, and all of a sudden I'm a wanted man and I lose everything. It's like, well, that is just, you know what, if you're going to tell me that my entire time with that quest was just wasted, then thank you for telling me that I'm just wasting my time with the game in general. Haven't played it since.
God damn, that just feels like old school GTA 3 5-star, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's like two or three months ago, and I haven't looked back since. And I feel really, really bad about it because somebody got that game for me. And I hate to tell her, like, you know, point blank, like, thank you for getting this game for me. It's a piece of shit.
Yeah, but anybody can parse out. It's like, well, you know, like, it didn't meet expectations. That's not my fault. That's Rockstar's fault. And for me, it was Spider-Man. Right? Like, I hadn't played anything in forever, in earnest. Like, I played Mega Man 11, and I was so jazzed about it. And, it was, like, before Mega Man 11, like I hadn't really played anything, because my world has been wrapped up in just, like, voiceover and fucking diesel dust, and that's it. And also part of me was... And here's something that I'm going to say just as a general bit of advice. So long ago, too long ago, I made the choice to really stop interacting with the media and the things that I love so much that informed the look and the feel that eventually became what Bennett and I agreed Diesel Dust is going to look and feel like. Because I was so afraid that I was going to poison the well. Like, I was so afraid of this, like, Simpsons did it reality that I was like, I'll just put it in a pile and I'll watch it later. And you fast forward, you know, several years, and it's like, oh God, the pile is huge. I'm completely out of sync with, like, so much shit. I've missed so many things. It's very much like the original ending for Army of Darkness. Just like, I slept too long! And it was the wrong choice, right? Like, if you cut yourself off from the things that you love that inspire you to do something within the ecosystem that you love, you will start to feel numb you'll start to feel numb to what you're doing. You'll start to feel numb towards the things that you love. And then you're going to have to forcibly re-inject those things into your life. It is like a weird version of the Zoloft commercial with that, like, with that depressed bubble.
Oh yeah. You're bringing back memories.
So I started to make the choice of, like, I need to start making these positive life changes. And that starts with, you know, very, very David Hayter in Guyver 2. I want my life back! And Spider-Man was coming out, and it looked so interesting. And I just went like, well, I haven't played a Spider-Man game in earnest since Edge of Time. All right, I'll do it. And it was the right choice. I bought it full price, and I did not regret it. And it is the first game that I have nearly 100%ed since maybe my teens. Because normally, like, I'll just go through the narrative and it's like, all right, fine, like, a couple of missions here and there, whatever. Like, if you go way, way back in a tool shed, you can listen to how much fucking Arkham pissed me off. Because what was the one that was, like, really rushed, really good, but really broken? That was Arkham City? It was Arkham Origins.
Yeah, like, God, like, those Arkham games can really blend in together. I never even bothered with the Arkham Knight.
Yeah, like, I could remember how pissed off I was about Arkham Origins, where, like, I fucking couldn't interrogate the last guy, I restarted the fucking system, restarted the save, and all the guys are gone, the one guy was still sitting there cowering, And I still couldn't interrogate him. And I was just like, I'm done. I'm done. Because you want to know why? Because I was actually trying to match Bennett's overall performance in Arkham games. I was jealous.
This is actually news to me, because I always felt that I wasn't all that great at Arkham game, all that great at the Arkham games, because you could see like every single like MLG 420 no scope in 360 no scope rather. Oh, I just embarrassed myself. Is this how the kids talk these days? I don't know. I've been out of gaming for too long. But you can see like all these compilations of people on Twitch just absolutely demolishing the games, like taking out every single goon in a room without breaking one combo. It was like 99 combos, 99 combos. And I'm like, wow, that's actually pretty freaking sweet. I mean, the best I did was I think that my most momentous accomplishment in the Arkham games was beating the original Arkham Asylum on the hardest difficulty and platinuming it, I think.
Like, I never did that. And to be honest, it was the fact that you were just so fucking prolific at just like, how did you find that Riddler trophy? Like, oh, you just do this and this and this. It's like, fucking what? So when Origins came out, I was like, I'm going to fucking do it like Bennett does it. I'm going to find all these goddamn trophies. I'm going to do all the things. And then this one 50-man challenge, and it was just like, nope. And I was like, fuck this game.
Oh, the worst one in Arkham City is when you had to do that goddamn glide where you had to kind of boomerang yourself into this cage that was right over the sea to try to get this one trophy at the end of the cage.
I gave up on it. I tried it for like an hour. And keeping in mind that you're listening to the same man that tried to and nearly successfully got the sigil for the Onion Knight in the Thunder Plains in Final Fantasy X without no encounter. I was young, I was stupid, and I was like, I don't need no encounter. How bad could it be? And I got up to like 30 dodges, and then just like, okay, go get no encounter, stupid.
Like, I'm trying to think, like, what was the stupidest, most needlessly effortful, achievement that you have made in gaming? And well, I guess, like, if you look at it from a time perspective, I did actually reach level 60 in World of Warcraft back in vanilla WoW. And that was a grind.
Yeah, it was. That was a job.
Back in the day, if you had a level 60 character back in the first year or two of WoW before Burning Crusade, that was a fucking job. But not only that, I also raided all the high level instances. I had Onyxia's head. I raided Molten Core. I nearly completed all of my tier one set, and I just a few more instances. But unfortunately, Burning Crusade came and went downhill. Got to level 70 and never played again, actually. I got out of Burning Crusade.
I remember when everybody was fucking PvPing for like 12 hours a day for fucking Grand Marshal armor. So, Spider-Man. I made the right choice, right? Like, it kind of kickstarted me back into... I love games. I love being a gamer. Like, the landscape has changed and the demographic is, you know, more with it, and new people are coming in all the time, and we're more fucking diverse, and we're all this fucking shit, and it's awesome. But, you know, like, because, like, it's like, sometimes it's hard to grapple with getting older and also trying to accomplish things creatively and also trying to hold on to dear life screaming on the back of a speeding car that is your impending death. That you still can love the things that you love.
I don't think we need to frame it so dramatically, but an interesting thing happened to me earlier this month. I got the flu, and it was a bad flu. Like, I was knocked out of commission for an entire week and a half, technically. So I just, like, didn't have much to do other than wait the flu out. So, yeah, I just popped in Fallout 4 again, because that's my Zen game. It's just a game that I can kind of let the environment, you know, put me at ease, and I can just run around the map, shoot super mutants, scrounge, build weapons. It's a very much a Zen experience for me. And then as I played Fallout 4 more and more, I I remembered how much I liked Fallout, the both Fallout 4 and Fallout 3, and I actually got back into exploring some of the expanded lore of Fallout 3, and I'd forgotten how just brutal Fallout 3 could be. And Fallout New Vegas, I never got to play Fallout New Vegas, unfortunately, but Fallout 3 especially, like. I remember you and I had an argument over Fallout 3, and you really hated the fact that you could throw grenades in vats. Cheese the hell out of the game for you. And that, and you never liked sandbox games to begin with. So, like, you and I are two different wavelengths when it comes to Fallout.
But I still argue that throwing grenades in vats is bullshit. Like, it's been years, well, but yeah, I in all the ways in which I have changed, in all the ways in which I have grown, I still hold fast to the idea that throwing grenades in vats is bullshit.
And I'm inclined to agree with you. That's why I was kind of, Fallout 4, they took it out. Like, you can't throw lob grenades, Molotov cocktails, nothing in vats. But to get back on Fallout 3, what I kind of appreciate Fallout 3 for having that Fallout 4 didn't have is, like, in Fallout 3, you were not necessarily encouraged to be evil, but if you wanted to be evil, you could be evil. In Fallout 4, you're just kind of a jerk. Like, if you... Like, in Fallout 4, like, the most... Like, I think the worst thing... The worst thing you can do as a choice is maybe... I think you could sell a ghoul kid into slavery, I think.
Oh, God!
But in Fallout 3, you can do the slaving. And you can enslave kids.
What?
Like, I never got that far because I ran out of ammo and I got tired of fucking hitting roaches with sticks.
Yeah, in Fallout 3, there is a place called Paradise Falls, and which is a big old slaver hangout. And this guy who's basically guarding the fence just says, all right, if you want in, you know, there's two ways you can get in. You can bribe him or you can accept a quest called It's Just Business, where you can enslave people. And you go inside Paradise Falls, and there's a quest line where you can free kids. But there's also a quest line where you talk to a guy named Eulogy Jones, and he sends you on a quest like, ah, those little bastards up in Little Lamplight. You know, I can make a tidy profit off of those little kids, but there's no way I can get him. He's like, well, I can lure one of them out, and you can throw a crown, you can throw a bomb collar on her and just make her into a slave. Oh, and you do!
Oh, my God!
Yes, you literally lure out a little six-year-old girl. A slaver meets you at the entrance of Little Lamplight, which is inside a cave, and she just goes, hey, we're going to go on an adventure. Here's our special friendship necklace. Let's wear it. And she puts it on, and the last thing she says as she's walking off into the distance is, I'm going on an adventure.
Oh, my God. Like, that is edgelord nightmare fuel to the max.
Like, I forgot that you could do that in Fallout 3. And then you go back to Fallout 4, where, like, slavery isn't necessarily a thing in the Commonwealth. I mean, like, there's that one instance where you could sell a ghoul kid to a slaver, but you never really find a slaver den like you could in Fallout 3 or in Fallout New Vegas. And I don't necessarily think the game is missing that necessarily, but to jump from Fallout 3 to Fallout 4 is like, I can't imagine a more wider gap between, oh, you think you're evil in Fallout 4, check this shit out.
Dude, that just feels like an absolute blank check for John Carmack to do whatever the fuck he wants in Doom, and then if Bethesda's like, hey, you can't be doing that, he's like, meh, remember that time when you dipped your toes into digital human trafficking? It's just like, oh, dear God, all right. So glad I got stuck just hitting roaches with sticks. That just seems like a fucking vacation now.
I mean, granted, you could go inside Paradise Falls and just fucking wipe the floor with all the slavers. And every time you kill a slaver, you're given good karma. And better yet, if you steal from the slavers, it's not considered an evil action because they're an evil NPC. So, like, you could, like, just completely raid their compound and free all the slaves. Like,
oh, so it all just balances out. It's okay, so long as, you know, you take the hero course and not the complete despot course.
The complete fucking antichrist choice.
Dude, I thought just blowing up Megaton was bad.
No, that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh my god. All right. So, Spider-Man. I really loved it. I really loved it. I loved its combat system. I had a hard time admitting it, but it is the best Spider-Man game ever made. I have not played the DLC. It has absolutely kickstarted my reignited my love of gaming. I'm excited for Devil May Cry 5, even though I didn't finish 4 because I got through all the Nero bits and then Dante played like a fucking tank.
You haven't played DMC4, but what about the original DMC? What about like the Ninja that Theory? Failed spin-off DMC? Like, I believe we went on the record as defending that game.
Yeah, we did. Like, I loved it. I still love it. Like, I think that, you know, it's really well written, it's really pretty, it controls really nice. That Dante Must Die mode is totally in there, so, you know, veterans had nothing to complain about other than maybe having to play the game on their easy mode once. But, you know, no need to kick up dust on that when DMC5 is already, you know, making people so happy. Because, I mean, it does look really, really fucking cool.
Although I will say, like, my one reticence with DMC5 is that just the updated visuals of Dante just makes me feel like, are Capcom finally getting hip to the fact that apparently gaming protagonists these days need to be grizzled veterans that just, like, are world-weary with the fact that they are video game characters, practically?
Well, it's weird, right? Because today is Chun-Li's birthday. She's 51.
Oh, yeah! You're right. She is.
Yeah.
If we take the screwed-up Street Fighter canon as actual lore... She would be 51 today.
Yeah. So people are celebrating Chun-Li's birthday, but it doesn't really, I mean, like, I guess that was part of the reason why it is that Hot Ryu got to be such a thing, because it's like, it's an older, more stately Ryu, even though the canonical year is like 2002. Whatevs, it all works. Because you want to know what, like, I'd rather they do that than what Soul Calibur ended up doing for one game, which is like, everybody's dead. And here's a bunch of people that fight in those styles that you like. Like, no, I want Taki back. I want Taki back. I want Sofitia back. I don't want this. There is no reason why it is that you needed to generationally age out literally every character I've been playing with, except for Yoshimitsu, because he's a zombie.
I shall assist you in your suicide.
Yeah, like, so, you know, I'd rather they just, like, you know, just keep the year on the reins. It was like, yeah, Street Fighter V is like in 2002. Everybody's in their mid to late 30s. You know, like, that's fine. I'll take it.
I don't know, like, at a certain point, like, having lore in a fighting game franchise is almost self-defeating.
It's not, though, because SNK proves you can do it. They, like, King of Fighters has absolutely bulletproof lore.
It does, but it keeps things vague. I mean, it's sort of like the Marvels. It's like the Marvel rule, where it's like a sliding scale on a timeline. You know, like, when did this happen? A couple of years ago.
Yeah, but they have managed to successfully have a bulletproof storyline, arcs, stakes, consequences that reach outside of the games they happen in. Like, they are committed.
Hey, speaking of fighting games, and actually looking forward to, how about that Mortal Kombat, huh? Fucking Mortal Kombat.
See, I didn't play the last one. Like, I didn't play the last one. I need to at least watch a Let's Play of the story playthrough, just to see what's going on.
The story mode was all right. It's basically Shinnok is bitch slapping everybody, so somebody has to stop Shinnok, and Raiden is becoming more and more unstable. So this entry, on one hand, because they kind of advanced the timeline where everyone's, you know, like, moms and dads now, like Johnny Cage and like Johnny Cage has a kid now. So I'm not quite sure what they're going to do unless they do another, you know, time skip Mortal Kombat 9. But that's the only way I can see it kind of going forward, because now all the characters are in, like, in their late, you know, either their late 30s or mid 40s. When Sonya Blade is mother to a full-grown woman, to wonder, like, why is she still a part of the Special Forces?
Dude, I don't know, man. I mean, like, because, well, at least why is she still grunting in the Special Forces, right? Like, why is she not in charge of somebody?
Although in the although in Mortal Kombat 10, she was actually, like, she did have seniority, and she was, like, a field general or something like that. Or, like, at the very least, somebody who was in line of command in the field. Hence why she was still, you know, putting up her dukes when there was a round to go on. But talking about Sonya Blade for a moment, I know why they did it. I know why they cast Ronda Rousey as Sonya Blade.
Wait, they did what now?
They cast Ronda Rousey as Sonya Blade.
Why?
Exactly.
This is news to me. You're listening to this as it happens. Why?
Oh,
I know why, but why? It's like Richard Epcar, Steve Bloom, Ronda Rousey. Like, okay.
I can kind of get it if this was a live action movie, but this isn't live action. It's a video game, and she's a terrible actress.
Oh, my God. All right.
She was the worst part of Fast and Furious 7.
She didn't have any lines.
No, but, like, there she was, sticking out like a sore thumb with the worst eye makeup in the world. I don't know what it is with Ronda Rousey and eye makeup, but she always looks like she either has pink eye or, like, she tried to apply, like, a wingtip, but just, like, fuck it.
I don't know. I mean, go on. Look, man, the smoky eye is powerful, but it's hard to do.
But it's like she's the one doing it. It's not like they don't have professional makeup artists to do this for her, and yet they still can't do it properly on her.
I don't know. Like, I'm 100% about Punch Girls. Okay, I am all on board that train, and I know why Rousey, when she was winning, was the darling of the world. And, you know, I hope that she carves out pretty much the same career that fucking Lesnar carves out, which is, you know, like, do WWE for a while, then go try and get her title back, then get smacked around for a bit, and then hopefully, you know, just bandy back and forth like that for a while until she gets bored and you know, whatever. Because the WWE mints actors. They have minted actors. They have minted great improvisers. They have minted all sorts of performers on every fucking level that we sit and enjoy today, where I seriously was driving one night and I had to come home. Like, when I came home, I get a hold of Bennett and I was like, dude, did you know that fucking Fozzie is not only still around, but it's in the Billboard top 30 right now?
Like, it only took them, 8 years for Jericho to actually crack the mainstream? And it seems like ever since that happened, like, Jericho has been on a continuous tour of giving Vince McMahon the middle finger. Because as soon as that happened, like, and he went and he took a break from WWE, he went to New Japan, and then now he's a part of All Elite Wrestling, which is by far and away the biggest, you know, the biggest contender to dethroning WWE as far as the American wrestling landscape is concerned. These are interesting times, my friend. These are interesting times for the mark.
I found the Jericho thing fascinating, right? Because on WMMR, they're playing Fozzie. And it kind of became that Marc Maron conversation all over again, where when somebody came to me at my old job and they said, like, have you listened to Marc Maron's podcast? I was like, how the fuck do you know who Marc Maron is? And, you know, that he had kind of, like, really stealth overnight became this huge fucking thing with WTF. And it felt the exact same way, where they're talking about fucking Fozzie on the radio. So I come home, I talk to Bennett, we start going over the fucking Wikipedia and the fact that he has managed to put out an album, like, almost once a year for 8 years and never misses a beat. And it's just like, that is amazing. That is the methodology of, I'm just going to do this until they take me seriously. And it worked.
He took 8 tries. But he did have a certified rock hit, which I don't know how to quantify in today's, you know, buttfuck music landscape right now. Can I just tell you that, even though I haven't, can I just tell you, like, I was a big fan of Filthy Frank because he was just the id personified. But then Joji, the guy who plays Filthy Frank, said he had enough and now he wanted to make make music without the, you know, without the guise of parody, without the guise of like, haha, this is supposed to be funny. And he just makes this boring, sad boy buttfuck music. It's the same down-tempo, like, oh, I treated you like shit, but I'm a piece of shit. I hope you're happier kind of fucking songs. Like, those aren't a dime a dozen every single fucking week. It's like, you hate to tell the sad clown to, you know, put the red nose back on, but get back in the pink jumpsuit if this is going to be the music you're going to be making.
I mean, there's an audience for everything, but I mean, some people just kind of get, you know, battled back. Like, it's not that you have bad ideas, it's that this idea was bad, so you need to, you know, like, go back on base until you come up with another idea. And, you know, like, that tends to be why a lot of bands break up. Because, you know, like, the fucking lead wants to sing this kind of music and the rest of the band just wants to play what they want to play. Like,
exactly.
For reasons of safety or security, or maybe they just think that's more fun.
Or that's, you know, that's just within their wheelhouse. I mean, you don't see AC/DC straying from their roots or straying at all. They write the exact same 3-chord song every single fucking time, and they hit it out of the park every single fucking time. I mean, no matter what, like, no matter how majestic a home run is, there isn't a lot of home run. It's just like the ball is traveling very far and it is out of here. And yet we cup to our feet every single fucking time it happens. And that's what an AC/DC song is.
Yeah, and that's after you realize the formula and you get angry about the formula, but then you're like, Back in Black is really amazing.
looking at that actual riff and how to play it, it sounds simple, but to actually get the, you know, like, right? Oh, that's going to cramp your hand.
Yeah, you're a better man than me, just because, like, me and guitar, it's just like idle strumming therapeutically. All right, I'm done. And then I break a string and I'm like, eh. I'll just buy another guitar later.
Replace the string. Like, I'm talking to the guy who is the DIY guru out of everyone I know. But he breaks a string on his guitar and is like, I'll take care of it eventually.
I don't know what it is, man. Like, I have one electric guitar, like one of those shitty starter electric guitars that a friend gave to me. I've got an acoustic that a friend gave to me because he didn't want it anymore. And then I have the little baby acoustic that I found at my dad's house. And every time, it was just like, it wasn't happening when I was playing it. I would just come in and then a string would break just randomly one day. And like, all right, well, I'm down one string. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I'm down 2 strings. And it's like, man, this is unplayable now. So, and like, it's always very background for me where it's like, I want to, you know, commit some time to learning how to play guitar. And it is still on my list of things that I will invest the time in doing. Just not fucking right now.
Like, that's sort of the, like, that was always my goal about bass, because as soon as I, like, lost all the weight I did, I just said, okay, what am I going to do with this energy now? Like, I'm still exercising, I'm still eating right, but I'm not, you know, like, okay, now I gotta lose this 100 pounds, because if I did that again, I'd be dead. So it came, all right, so where do I put all this concentrated energy now? I was like, okay, I'll get to bass. I'll learn the bass as I've been meaning to do for the last 9 years. 9 years. And I started April of 2018, and I've just been keeping at it. And I don't know, I see a tutor, like, I see a guy who is teaching me how to sight read music and how to, you know, the and talking about the theory of music. And while it's very, very enlightening, I still don't necessarily have a good grasp on how bad I am. I know I'm not good. I just know that, you know, like, I'm better than, you know, like, if you took a random person off the street, gave them a bass, is like, play something on it, I'm better than that guy. I can comfortably say that. But as far as, like, if am I able to play something you would want to hear? Not. Or at the very least, or unless you want to hear some, you know, basic punk rock song, or I don't know, some Green Day song. I learned through Rocksmith, and I made it a point to try to find not only the songs I wanted to learn how to play, but also songs that are I know would be easy to learn how to play, so I can just kind of ramp up to the songs I want to play. And so I wind up downloading a bunch of Green Day songs, a bunch of fucking U2 songs, and I hate myself for doing it because I know that that gives money to U2 and Green Day. But it was still the thing, it was still necessary. And here's, I literally tell you this without any sense of hyperbole. The first week of me taking up the bass, I learned how to play With or Without You. And I didn't even need to look at the notes. I could play it by heart. Because it's the four chord song that, you know, by the Axis of Awesome. It's literally, I know the bass line to the four chords.
Which, I mean, what remains to be the important thing is that, you know, you're really proud of it, relatively speaking, other than this one self-deprecating tirade. And you've been having fun with it. So, you know, like, because what did I just get done saying in this absolutely pinballing episode of Tool Shed? It's just like, don't sacrifice fun. Don't sacrifice fun for some being an adult. Don't sacrifice fun for anything. Just do it, you know? And the things that you do inform the other things that you do. The things that you take into your soul inform the whole of you. Right? Like, you are a music guy. And like you said, once upon a time, I want to play bass. And then 9 years pass, and you're like, God damn it, I'm going to play bass. So you played bass. And you don't have to fucking bring the house down and play, like, fucking local shows and shit. You don't have to do the local open mic at a coffee shop. Like, you just have to, you know, like, you're not doing it for an audience, you do it for you. And there's so many things. It's just like, you don't have to do it for a fucking audience. You know, just draw a picture for you. Play the bass for you. Do those things. Like, have those things for you. That's healthy. You know, because, like, and it's weird, right? Because you can get really enticed looking around and just going, like, there are so many performative people around me. You're right. There are. There are so many performative people. Swing a cat, you will hit somebody's fucking Twitch stream. But I promise you that all those people are still carving out time for themselves to just do bullshit whenever they can. Like, even the ones who are fucking like, I'm fucking slammed, I've got the schedule, I've got to fucking hit this, like, this date, and this date, I've got to make sure that my Twitch stream is always on, like, on at the same time every week. I promise you, those people are still doing their absolute damnedest to carve out time for themselves.
And I think that's what was some of the missing ingredients in the last couple of months leading up to this, leading up to today. Because I relearned how well I operate underneath a schedule. But when I live underneath a schedule, no matter how productive I am, I always feel like I'm missing something, like my me time. So while I do work and I continue my schedule of exercising and practicing, and on top of all of that, I'm also learning Japanese because I work with anime. I should at the very least learn to read hiragana. But beyond all of that, I learned that while I feel great being productive and while I feel great learning something new and applying what I've learned, there is something to be said about just turning off your brain and enjoying you and your life. Because life isn't just heart attacks, board meetings, and cancer. You have to learn to find the things in life that you enjoy doing and just do them for their own sake. Like wrestling and Fallout is that for me. Learning to play bass used to be like that for me, but I like too much time and money for it to just be a hobby. I want to try and do something with that later down the line. especially because everyone and every other platform that I could upload something to probably does not want copyrighted music in the background of it, which if you're playing the bass, you kind of need, because trying to play the bass unaccompanied is tantamount to saying, hey, how fast can you click this off? Nobody wants to hear just the bass play. They want to hear the whole song.
Yeah, in the good old days of just setting up your camera and playing for your webcam, they're gone. They are so gone. Content ID is not fucking around.
The closest I could come to an understanding is probably on something on Twitter, because I think the Twitter's I know Twitter does have Content ID, but it's not as stringent as it is on Facebook or on YouTube, especially if it's just if it's just some guy playing. Music companies aren't going after Twitter's like, hey, song there, get that off the internet rather.
Yeah, so enjoy that while it lasts. God damn it.
No, I let the cat out of the bag. Now they've...
You've sent the dogs. What have you done? So the big umbrella here is that, like, yeah, it's been 19 months since Toolshed. And honestly, it's that, like, we've been living our lives. To the best of our ability, we've been living our lives and not, you know, not shirking responsibility, not thinking about you, our gentle audience, our very respectful audience. It's that, you know, like it was just this weird combination of fucking things that, you know, the turnkey thing was just like, that was it. You know, like if it becomes hard to record Toolshed, like not that we're averse to hard things, but it's just like, how do you solve this problem? Like it's weird, right? Just because, you know, podcasting on Skype used to be a three computer endeavor when I was working with A-Bear, and then we had, you know, Skype recorders and they were fine, but the API kept fucking changing, and then you'd have to find a new recorder. And then when it just finally, like when we recorded three fucking shows, it was just like, oh god fucking damn it, just all right, just shelve it, there's other shit we have to worry about. And that's like, and that's what happened to fucking Toolshed. And in that time, you know, what else has happened? The Diesel Dust teaser and trailer came out, and you know, and we're really proud of those two things. I'm working on it. It's been uphill the whole fucking way.
Both ways, in the snow.
In the snow with no shoes on. But, you know, it's like Diesel Dust is, you know, it's all of our original love for fucking Borderlands 2. It's our love of space westerns. It's, you know, because, like, I've actually answered this question as people have asked it. And it's just like, where does Diesel Dust come from? And it's like, honestly, it's from the fact that Bennett and I sat around, you know, and said, like, we haven't seen a space western in a while. And there's a lot of things that we want to do with it. And part of it, but the biggest chunk of it has been R&D. Because I had to go from not knowing how to do any of that shit to knowing how to do that shit to learning how to do that shit better and faster. And most importantly, cheaply. So it's been uphill. But what we have on display so far, which, I mean, the very nature of the animation is that, you know, like, even the things that you've seen, like, other than the teaser trailer, which is Cadence walking through the facility, like a lot of that footage wasn't even like super shiny new. A lot of that footage was just stuff that I threw together in a trailer fashion. So the show is actually going to, like, the pilot, because that's what's being worked on right now, is the pilot. The pilot's going to look better than it does in the trailer. Not a lot better, but better. And then in transitioning from the platform that we're on now, which is Blender, to a more forgiving platform, which would be Unity Engine, it comes with a lot of asset management tools and just really interesting, cool filmmaking tools, and like, it will just make my life as a lone animator easier. We've gotten help from Stefan Krosik, who works on a show called Fistmaster, and it just happened to be the weirdest thing in the world that we both ended up with Noack as a supporting lead.
I don't know, like, sometimes, is it all that weird? I mean, our circles are a lot smaller than we give them credit for.
Really, it's that, yeah, you're right. Like, it's that our circles are small and Noack is awesome.
Like, Noack everybody gets should be around.
Like, Noack gets around, like, everybody should be knocking his door down all the time. The end. But, you know, there, like, there's just a lot of, like, really... Because someone had looked at a picture of Cadence Riley and Huxley, played by Sarah Williams, Jesse Noack, and Kyle Hebert. And they looked at this one shot and they said, these three characters just don't... Like, there's something strange about them. And it was the mugshot shot. And I said, well, it's because they're inspired by three separate eras of anime. Because it really is just, like, Bennett and I being old Taku on display.
Pretty much. Like, not to you know, show too much or anything, but one of the things that I wanted the look of the show to capture is the notion of the burly guy. Because if you look at anime, there is no such thing as burly anyone. You might see a fat character, but they're always like comedic side characters or such. There's hardly any guy that looks like there's a lot of heft to him, but there could be muscle underneath that heft. And back when we were designing Riley, I told Mark, like, can't Riley just, you know, like, be functionally fat or just kind of more of a rotund character? And after Mark molded the idea around and thought about some of his favorite characters that are like that, like Coop from Mega's XLR, you know, he saw where I was coming from, and that's what made Riley look like Riley. And as far as Huxley is concerned, that we were both just kind of talking about like how cyberpunk needs like a kind of a revitalization, and that's where Huxley kind of comes from.
Yeah, just like that, bright, like bringing bright
cyberpunk
colors
back to punk.
Yeah, like because he is a punk. and Noack accentuates the punk part real nice. Yeah, like Huxley, like the design of Huxley is that very Bubblegum Crisis level of cyberpunk, and like the things that surround him will definitely illuminate that a little bit better.
Because, like, in our view, like, unfortunately, in our setting, you can't have fingerless gloves for typing.
No. I mean, you could. Huxley originally had, like, fingerless gloves, and I had forgotten about them for the longest time. Like, he used to have red, because it used to be that his knee pads and his gloves were a set. And I still have them. Like, I still have the assets for that. But,
Oh, wow. We got the juicy exclusives here on Super Tool Shed.
But I, like, because right now, like, seriously, you want to know how it is that that progression of learning this shit goes? Like, you, like, nothing, like, none of these artists that you see, like, they don't start, they don't come to your fucking Twitter feed fully formed. Like, they had to start somewhere, and I had to start somewhere. And we are on Cadence 6, Huxley 4, and Riley 3. Right, like that's how deep it is.
Remember, like during the sweating, like just sweating our balls off summer nights, where I was on the other end while you were like designing Huxley, and this is going through the second or third iteration of Huxley. I mean, I'm sorry, Riley. It was Riley, and you were going through the second or third iteration of Riley, and you just goes, "I hate designing dudes."
I do, and there are so many artists that I think will agree with me. Every once in a while on that, like, I'm not gonna fucking stroke that with a broad brush, but like, I've always hated drawing dudes. I always hate designing dudes. I hate their clothes. And you know, like, it's because obviously, you know, like so much of Diesel Dust is just like all these different fucking love letters that are compiled into this insane fax document that we're calling Diesel Dust. And you know, like, fucking, like it's not going to be a surprise to anybody that Riley is a love letter to Jet Black. But even at that, you know, like, even at designing this, like, burly dude and throwing A-Bear behind him, which, you know, A-Bear's audition was pretty much just me going, Kyle, say this. And he said it, and I was like, yeah, that's what I thought. You're Riley. Because sometimes casting's just that easy. You just need your suspicions confirmed with casting sometimes. I mean, other times it's that you've got to do a huge, big, wide search. But sometimes it's just as easy as knowing what somebody's going to do. And, you know, like Riley was tough, but some of the characters related to Riley weren't as tough because, again, fun is important. Like, if you are designing shit that you don't necessarily like doing, take forever. But there is one character who is planned for the actual first episode that it was just cackles all the way through, right? It was just like, it was fun to create this character. It's going to be fun for anybody who gets it when episode one is eventually done. Like, and right now what the plan is to release the pilot, break down the infrastructure, build up a new infrastructure, and then do part one do episode one in parts. So that way it's easier to deliver, it's easier to produce. And, you know, like plus or minus anybody that jumps on board that can help us out. But, you know, like, it's when you're designing the stuff that's really fun, it gets done lickety split. When you're working on the stuff that's just like boring tables, chairs, fruit for the tables, backings for the chairs, it's the biggest fucking slog on earth, because you have to decide what it looks like, then you have to build it, then you have to make sure it looks right from every angle, then you have to texture it, and then you have to rig it if it needs a rig. And it can just really fucking take it out of you. It really can. And I know that we just went like really the longest time without saying anything about Diesel Dust since we put the two bits of footage out last year. But that's the deal. Like, that's the game right now, is that we finish the pilot, release the pilot, and then we break down the infrastructure, build up a new one based around Unity Engine, and we haul off to episode one.
Basically, once we drop the pilot, it's smoke bomb! See you in another 8 years.
No fucking way, dude. Like, I've consistently said over time that the bumper sticker says Diesel Dust or Bust, and I mean that. Because, like, I'm in love with what we've done, what we're doing, and what we plan to do. And the amount of support that we got just for what amounted to 2 minutes worth of footage was really just sweet and encouraging and just super fucking cool. And I'll be honest, man, when the teaser dropped the day before, I gave it to Bennett because I had to, because that was the only way I would stop working on it. And I was in New York recording Pokemon that day, and I'd gotten out of my session, and Bennett messages me and he's like, all right, it's going up in 10 minutes. And I didn't have a power bank, and my phone was dying, and I had all of 15 minutes of battery power left, and I was having the hugest panic attack. I was like, oh my god, is this it? Like, is this where I get run out of town on a rail? Oh. And I had to, you know, my phone died while I was on a 2-hour bus ride home. And I came home and I couldn't even look at YouTube. I was like, Bennett, how's it doing?
I was like, the response was like, hey, what's this? What, this is an anime abandoned. Because we keep forgetting that people who watch the show on YouTube don't necessarily follow my entire career or even check out the site. So to them, I'm just the anime abandoned guy. So to see something called Diesel Dust, what the hell? I think the trailer drop created a lot of confusion for people who are not in the know. And it's kind of hard to expect everyone to be in on the know when YouTube is, you know, like, even when you subscribe to somebody on YouTube, you're not necessarily subscribed to them on YouTube. You miss updates from them. I think one guy on a comment underneath the video of one of the recent episodes, rather, just said, he's like, God damn it, YouTube fucked me again. But, sorry, dude, but I'm glad that you, I'm so glad that you're, you know, you're keeping with me. I haven't lost your attention yet.
I don't know what the fuck it is with YouTube and them obfuscating audience interaction.
You know what it is? It's, they have to justify their wages sometimes. If you have somebody who is there to design something on your website and after they're done with nothing to do, so you just kind of have to create work for them by making needless updates, and that needless update breaks something. It's like, well, that's something else that they could do to justify their wages.
Yeah, and I've run into that before, and it never produces anything of worth ever. But we can't live in a fully freelance society, can we? People need actual jobs. Gig economy be damned. So, yeah, on top of everything else, like, that's the deal with Diesel Dust. I want to thank, like, because you're our audience, so I want to thank you guys for watching it, for passing it around, for asking about it. I want to, you know, just kind of, in a bubble, just, like, thank the people who asked me, like, specifically, like, what are you using? How is this happening? Like, when we premiered the first 4 minutes at Yomacon, which... compared to what we have now, look like garbage. somebody actually was really, you know, they were a Toolshed fan, so maybe you're in the audience right now listening to this. Hey, guy. And he had asked, like, is this mocap? And it's like, no, it's all fucking keyframes, dude. And it still is, you know. And I've learned a lot, and I'm still learning. I'm like every scene I'm learning something new, and every day Blender's toolkit gets better. Like, part of the reason why it is that we want to, you know, fold Unity into the infrastructure is because Unity can render everything in real time and do it very prettily. And that's not to say that, you know, fucking Blender 2.8 Eevee, for those of you who are Blender savvy, isn't really cool and interesting looking, but right now, like, that's not even out of beta technically. Like, it's not solid yet, and more importantly, the way shit goes with Blender is that it's gonna work, but you're gonna have to sacrifice a bunch of shit to get it to work. And really, like, I want to streamline the production pipeline of the show, because right now, even as it is, like, I would love to just take everything that I've done in terms of just raw animation and just dump it straight into Unity and press the play button, and I can't, because I'm using so many Blender dependent tools that they just don't exist in Unity. And that's not Unity's fault, that's not even Blender's fault, that is just a baseline, like, nativity compatibility issue. And, you know, like, when it was all just like, oh, well, like, you know, Blender's it. Like, yeah, that's fine. But to use Blender as an animation deck and Unity as a camera and rendering deck is just a far better solution. One of the things that got said to me when I was out having a smoke at Yomacon was, a guy comes up to me and he says, like, I had no idea that Blender could do all of that. I had messed around in Blender a few years ago, but I didn't know that it could do all of that. Keeping in mind that, again, compared to what it looks like now, it looks like shit. But he said that he was encouraged to return to Blender and really give its features a genuine flying lap. And that's great. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, it would be great if we could be Scott Mosier on Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, you know, and just throw money at every fucking problem. But there is, and Bennett, you know, like, back me up on this if you feel this way. I don't put too much stock in the idea of indie cred, right? Like, we did it the hard way, even though the easy way was right there. Because, you know, because that could be like your fucking, your tour of duty bandolier.
It's like, at this point, trying to claim indie cred is tantamount to selling out, because it achieves the exact same thing. And I think by now, considering how long we've worked on this, I think that's just indie cred in of itself.
Yeah, so we're
worked up by Netflix tomorrow.
We're stocked up on fucking indie cred. So, damn the man. But like, honestly, it's just that, like, I maintained a very hard line of like, I learned how to do this in Blender. Blender is an amazing fucking learning platform. This is fucking killer. It's free. And it still is. And it's still fucking hold on to Blender for as long as humanly possible. Like, I know that Maya is better and has better tools because the industry invested so much money in those tools. And that Pencil Plus is fucking amazing.
I'm not too familiar with Pencil Plus.
Pencil Plus is the line rendering engine. Like, while we're doing it because currently we're doing it the old-fashioned way, the Monty-Ohm way, where essentially it's that, like, there's a solidify modifier on every character model that's using a shadeless texture, and its normals are flipped so the camera can't see anything except for the outside of the extruded model. And that's where our lines come from, and that's where Monty's lines came from. But Maya has Pencil Plus, which I'm fairly certain does the same thing, but not at such a huge fucking memory deficit. And more importantly, like, the lines that it generates are way nicer. And on top of that, I think it has line depth control. So, like, it doesn't have to be, like, one uniform thickness line. Like, it can be kind of a circumstantial thickness. So, Pencil Plus is really cool. Maya is fucking amazing. But so much of me wanted to see if, like, I learned in Blender, can we get this done in Blender? The answer was yes. So, can we get this done in Blender and Unity? And now Unity's making this big fucking push, especially after they won their Emmy for filmmaking, which is great. It's a great place to fucking be. If you have an idea, right now, Blender and Unity is where it's at, because free! And I learned via all YouTube videos, man. YouTube University. That's how I learned to fix the bird. It's how I learned to make shit in Blender. And you can too.
Exactly. Like, it's sort of like Premiere. You can learn how to do anything in any complicated program if you just know how to ask the right question. If all you're asking Google is, how do I do the thing where the thing does the thing? Then you're not going to get anywhere. But if you learn the terminology, then you can look up whatever you need to know how to do.
Exactly.
There are a ton of dedicated people who have spent an exorbitant amount of time creating tutorials and answering questions on forums and making how-to videos on their YouTube channels. There is an entire community of mechanics, of programmers, of artists, of developers, all just trying to share what they've learned so that another poor soul doesn't have to go through what they went through.
Exactly that. And that is, like, I have reaped the benefit of so much of that learning, of them learning the hard way. And, you know, again, I'm still learning, but I have, you know, been one to answer questions about Blender that even people with way more tenure than me didn't know the answers to. And to switch tracks a little bit, to go back to the bird, like, the bird had a massive fucking ignition system failure. Like, it left me on the side of the road. My ignition control module fucking shat the bed because it was Duralast. Nothing wrong with Duralast, it's just that ignition control modules are made of glass and fucking cotton. So for 18 days straight, I'm looking over the Firebird forum that I go to. I'm having to collect all this disparate information and stories and absorb these arguments between guys who think that they know what this, like, what causes this problem, and, well, this one time when it was a full moon out, my Firebird did this, and blah, 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 and I fucking completely omitted the fact that I ripped out the whole fucking ignition system and put in a third-party ignition system instead. Like, it was nuts. And, I mean, like 18 days. 18 frustrating, tired, freezing-ass days I dealt with this. And even my friend Ted came over, and he's got... He has like an actual Trans Am. Like, you can see his Trans Am in an episode of Regular Car Reviews. And my friend Ted of Regular Car Reviews fame came over to try and help me out, and he couldn't figure it out. Like, he could only so far as the mechanical. And then at one point he gets a hold of me on Messenger, and he says, "Do me a favor, check to see if your dipstick smells like gas." And I did, and it did. And I was like, "Yeah, my dipstick smells like gas." Why does my dipstick smell like gas? It means you have a leaking injector. So, this pretty much led me all the way down to the fuel rail. I had to get new injectors. I had to replace the pickup coil of my distributor. I had to replace the distributor cap, the distributor rotor, the idle air control valve that controls how much air is getting into the fucking cylinders when I'm just sitting at a stoplight. All this shit. And on the tail end of it, I said to myself, because, you know, V6s are the, you know, like, we are tolerated, is what we are in the muscle car community. We are tolerated. But, I mean, honestly, all the guys on the Firebird forum I go to are really cool. But I said, I'm going to write an entire fucking write-up, because just searching V6, no start, crank, like, just cranks, or V6, no spark, just cranks, gets you so many results, tons of people just arguing back and forth, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this, but there was no real check system, there's no real troubleshooting guide, it was just a bunch of guys swapping fucking stories. And the other really, really bad thing, which is people who would get their issue fixed by one of the answers, but not coming back to tell anybody what it was.
Those people need to be shot.
Those people need to be shot in front of their families. This is a database, a community database of information. If your shit got fixed, tell us how. So I wrote this huge fucking write-up. And it just goes through everything, like, all the days just, like, compressed into blocks. It's not your ECM. Here's what this part is, why it might be this, why do your ignition controllers keep burning out, this thing, that thing, and the other thing, and absolutely, at the end, me imploring anybody who reads it, if you get your issue fixed, drag your ass back here and tell us how you did it. Because you could really help somebody out in the future. Like me, 18 days ago. And, you know, the forum admins, they were really appreciative. And, you know, they're like, this is a really great write-up. And, you know, like, it's like, it should help a lot of people the next time that happens. Because this happens a lot. 30-year-old car, by the way. You know, like, that's, it's just, you know, it's what comes with the fucking territory. But
exactly. Like, I just want to quickly interject that it's almost as if I can tell when something is wrong with the bird, because you usually call me at an unusual time as like, "Hey, Mark," and it's like, "Bennett," it's like, "Is something wrong with the car, Mark?"
And I did this write up on Facebook, right? Because I jumped the gun in talking about it on Twitter, where it's like 9 days, and it's fixed. And it took twice that long. And all right. So I do this write up on Facebook where I'm just like, look, this car is so important to me. It's not an appliance. It's my friend, right? I lost my last friend to a trust fund kid. And I'm not letting that happen again. Like, Molly was important to me, right? And, you know, fucking Armitage is just as important, if not more important, because I've said, recorded, that this one's the last one. Which all by itself feels like a bad luck statement. You know, and
you're just begging for trouble at that point.
I really feel like I am, and I shouldn't have fucking said it then, and I shouldn't say it now, just because it just feels like I'm going to jinx it. But, you know, like, this car is so important to me. Like, it's the platform that I learned how to fix cars on, to help people on, to help people with. You know, like straight left turn, I helped 16 people last year, stuck on the side of the road. 16. Double fucking digits. I was pulling for 20, but it just didn't happen. That was 16 individual people that I stopped, helped, accepted no money, said happy motoring, and then left. And, like, it means so much to me. And more importantly, because a friend of mine, she's the one that lent me the money when I had no money to get that car. She came with me to go see it, even. And whenever I post about it, she likes my posts about, you know, like, I'm fixing this, I'm getting ahead of this, I'm improving this, I'm making this safer, you know, just so many things. And so even, you know, her encouragement is wrapped up in this car. And, you know, like, it's not a delight all the time. Like, I love fixing stuff. I love helping people and fixing stuff and pizza.
I'm sorry, I was not expecting the pizza drop there. Somebody hasn't had their carbs today.
I had them yesterday. It's fine. I had to write on my whiteboard, "You always regret pizza," to try and dissuade myself from getting pizza. Like, I love fixing stuff and I love helping people. But, you know, like, it's not fun all the time. Like, it's one thing when it's a problem that I can't solve over, you know, a couple of days. It's another thing when it's like, with last summer, I, like, because the time before the last time Bennett was here, because every time it is too many games weekend, it is two things. It is scorching hot and rainy. Like, without fail. And I resolved, I'm going to rebuild the AC system. Because it just needs to happen. Like, there need to be, like, we need the ability to close the fucking windows, be dry, and not breathe each other. So, what happened with that was that I got a new compressor, and I found that there was a hole in one of the return hoses, and I had to get a special hose. I had to get a brand new hose, custom made and ordered from Texas.
Jesus.
I had to go through two different evaporative radiators, because even though my car is a 91 model year, it has the radiator and end hoses from a 92 for some reason, which an expert tells me it's because it probably rolled off the line in the middle of 1991, and all the middle of the year cars have weird shit going on like that. I had to get new everything, but I kept running into these issues where the parts were not readily available. And then what happened was I had to make a choice. I could either borrow my mom's car for the weekend and put her out, or admit defeat and put the car back together. Now, here's the thing about getting older. Here's the thing about change. Now, that same fucking week, I started to, like, this happened over a course of, like, 2 weeks. And in that same time, I felt really bad about our, like, our friend Aaron. She stays with us too, and she goes with us too many games. And my downstairs bathroom, the fucking door was wrecked. And, like, it wouldn't hold fucking screws in the hinges. The molding was anything. So I grabbed my friend Pete, and I was like, Pete, can you take me to Lowe's? And I want to get a new door for the bathroom. And we had to spend an entire day, which turned into 2 days, knocking out all the molding for the door in the bathroom and hanging a brand new door and hanging, like, with, like, actual, like, spacers and fucking everything. And I suck at carpentry. But this was going on while the air conditioning thing was going on. But the thing about getting, like, I said that because of, here's the thing about getting older. A younger me would have died on the sword of, I am not putting the car back together until this is one complete piece as I intended it to be. I said I was going to do it, and I'm going to do it. And at the in the 11th hour, I had to admit defeat. Like, I admitted defeat because when I was presented with put my mom out or put the car back together, I said, I'm not going to be a dick. We're going to be out all weekend. We're going to be out for hours. My mom might actually need her fucking car. She almost never needs her car on weekends, but that's not the point. So I ate my fucking hat. I put the car back together. I had to apologize to Bennett because that was a promise that I made to him. I was like, going to have fucking air conditioning. Like, I got the door. Like, the door works.
Which, you know, granted, like, being in that car in that summer with air conditioning versus not having a door in that bathroom, I would have had the door in that bathroom. Between the two.
Because it's weird, right? Like, all the weird shit about your own house, you don't think about it until you have company.
Except when it becomes catastrophic. This just happened to me earlier this week. Sorry to dovetail off your story, but my roof is leaking.
Like, Bennett lives on the first floor, tells me this, and I'm like, but you live on the first floor. How? And
we still don't know. My landlady said that the guy who's supposed to be coming over to try and check it out will be coming over next week, but my mind's racing over, like, what in the world could be? What could be is, like, is my upstairs neighbor's balcony, like, there's some kind of reservoir that's, you know, that's forming, that's seeping in underneath their floors and coming out through our ceiling? I don't know. But it was one of the more miserable nights, not necessarily because, oh, there's water everywhere or anything like that. It was just a reminder of how kind of, you know, it was just a reminder of, like, the state of being I felt like I was in at the time. It was just like, oh, it's raining outside. It's been raining nonstop for the last 3 days. We've had 6 inches of rain in 2 days. It's like, can a fella get a break? Can a fella get a break? And then all of a sudden I hear this, flop. Wait, what? And I look, jerk myself awake, and I hear this flop, and I'm like, what, the fucking ceiling cave in? What happened? And I look, and I run out of my bed, and I looked at it, and it's like, no, the leak is still there. It's like, but the ceiling's okay. What the fuck happened? And then I look at my window, a fucking tree branch broke off from the wind and nearly broke my window.
Oh, what, the sliding glass window or your actual room's window?
My actual bedroom window.
Oh, shit. I know that tree.
Yeah. And I'm not a religious man or anything like that, but I had to look up to the heavens. It's like, is that you trying to do me a favor? He's like, well, at least I didn't do it. One for flinching, puss. Punch, punch.
I mean, I get that feeling, right? Because the tree outside of my house just fell down away from the bird. And thank you for your concern, Travis. No, seriously, I appreciate it. Because, like, I was concerned about the rain because I heard that there was flooding. And then I was listening to NPR today, and they're talking to like, I don't even know what this woman's position is in the government of Sonoma County. But she's talking about the fucking flooding and how it's like this generational issue, and it's like the, and it's the most water in fucking 25 years, and how like these roads are fucking impassable, and that there's just all these fucking like townships that are pretty much islands right now. And I'm sitting here like somewhere in Sonoma County, and I'm sure that Bennett has seen this guy once. There's a guy who bought a boat on Craigslist, just like a shitty little fucking boat. And he is sitting pretty right now. He's just like, you all fucking thought I was crazy. But who's the crazy one now? Because I can go get groceries.
Hey, you could ride my boat, the USS Madick. You want to get on Madick?
I'm just thinking about, like, because that guy has to exist, right?
He does. He does exist, and he is annoying. Like, for people who are, I don't assume that everyone who listens to Toolshed is familiar with the geography of Sonoma County and Santa Rosa, particularly. First of all, my property is fine outside of the leak in my ceiling. I'm not below sea level. I'm not near the river, so my property is fine, and my parents' house is fine, but. The river that is flooding right now is the Russian River, and that's not the first time, you know, like, the Russian River floods, not rarely. Usually. We've had, not since the drought, though, but it's been a while since they've had a pretty big drought, a pretty big flood, rather. But this isn't the first time this has happened, and it's the exact same mentality you see all over the United States. It's like, we lost everything in that flood. I guess we'll rebuild in this exact same spot.
Which, I mean, there'd be no problem with that if they spent money on the infrastructure to do anything about it, like rechannel the water or something like that, as opposed to making it an emergency sandbag response whenever it happens. But it's also hard to... It's really hard... Like remember the British Avengers, right? Like, a man who carries... Yeah, like, a man who carries an umbrella is a man who prays for rain. Well, a man who doesn't carry one is a fool. You know, like, that's... Like, it's those dueling mentalities, right?
Yeah. I mean, granted, it's like, it's the difference between a guy who has, you know, like... It's the difference between a guy who has all of his insurance paid up and a guy who realizes, I'm gonna be dead either way. So, I don't... Why even... Like, why pay for it?
Yeah, and that's, like, now you, like, you apply that to infrastructure, right? Where it just becomes so hard to fucking argue for, it's so hard to prove a negative, or what is at the time a negative. Like at some point, we're going to see the worst flood we've ever seen, and we're going to need the infrastructure to fucking shore that up, or else people are going to lose a whole ton of their shit. It's like, yeah, but we've never seen the worst flood we've ever seen. You know, we've never seen the worst earthquake we've ever seen. We've never seen the worst tornado we've ever seen. So, how do you prepare for something you've never seen?
The wonders ever cease.
And that's just the way that fucking, like, because you might sit there and think, like, oh, well, that's how government works. It's like, not, like, that's just how people think. And, you know, like... There's always going to be those two dueling banjos where, like, I'm a guy who says, I'm going to prepare for the worst thing I've ever seen. And then there's going to be another guy that says, but how do you know what that is?
There's also the mentality of, well, you know, like, here's this really, really hard thing to do that might not necessarily need to be done. Ooh, it's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of man hours. It's going to take a lot of energy for something we might not need.
Yeah. And yet, these, like, those are the same jerk offs that'll be like, here, I got this shirt. And you read it and it says, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. It's like, what is so hard about fucking preparing for the worst thing you've never seen? Like, dude, it's just a shirt.
Exactly. What's the word? It's like the windfall of spending the time and money to fix up, like, roads and to fix up everything and to fix up infrastructure is mitigated by the fact that you actually have to spend the money.
Which, all right, so let's scale this down to something in your regular life, right? Something that you'll be able to recognize. every you hear a car with a squeaking belt, that is somebody who's never had a belt snap on them on a long trip.
Doesn't even know that this car has a belt.
And you hear squeaking belts everywhere. People love walking on broken legs. They do. They just inherently do. Because, like, maybe they think that, like, well, you know, like, I don't want to spend the money to find out what that is. Okay, fine. Let me save you a lot of money and tell you what that is. It's your serpentine belt. It's gonna pop soon. And when it does, you're gonna hear a loud noise, and then you're gonna have about 10 to 15 minutes of driving before your battery, no longer being conditioned by your alternator, runs out. Everybody does this. So many people do this. I hear squeaking belts all the time. I mean, sometimes you can mistake a squeaking belt for a squeaking bearing in a water pump, which is bad too, by the way. But, and will also leave you stranded. But that's harder, requires tools, like real tools, and glue and a gasket. That one I don't really fault people on. But yeah, that just irritates me day to day, just because I'm just like, that costs literally $15 in a wrench to fix.
But some people just look at it like, you know, having a phone with a broken screen is like, I can still use my phone, it's just cracked.
Yeah, and then their fucking fingertip is all fucking bloody, and they're like, I don't understand what's the problem.
Oh, dearie me. It's been so much fun trying to catch up with you, Mark, at least recording us catching up. I can't tell you when the next tool shed is, but I can promise you that it's not going to be in another 19 months. But, Mark, I think it's high time for you to do what you do best.
Bring it on home!
Intro and outro music by Nick Vaughn. You can visit him on SoundCloud by clicking on the links below. You can take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bennettthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Bennett the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.